here called Creating Luxury, Enduring Pain. After examining 87 unionized hotels, including Hilton's, Hyatt's, and Marriott's, the study found that during the last 3 years, 30% of all injuries at hotels were experienced by housekeepers, a jump of 4% since 2001. The housekeepers experienced injuries at twice the rate of other hotel workers. This year is important for Unite Here, as the union faces multiple hotel contract expirations in major cities across the country. The union is hoping to use the nationwide expirations as leverage in helping raise wages and address many of the concerns raised in the study. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that the average take-home for a housekeeper in the United States is $17,310 per year.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
For the first time on record, child labor worldwide is on the decline. The International Labor Organization says that the number of workers under the age of 18 fell by 11% between 2000 and 2004, a drop of nearly 30 million. The biggest decline is in Latin America, where the number of child laborers has dropped by two-thirds in 4 years. And now with a special Workers Independent News sports report, here's Greg Gordon.
The NFL draft is over, but not everyone is cheering this entry-level form of hiring. The NFL, where all 32 owners share money, has created a system to divvy up college athletes that under most other circumstances would be illegal. The NFL is exempt from antitrust laws. College athletes with highly specialized skills have no say about where they ply their trade. The only way for a top athlete to exercise any control over where he goes is to insult the team that might draft him or play another sport. The present collective bargaining agreement ends in 2013. Here's the Wynn Economic Report. A new Massachusetts bill would guarantee all workers in the Bay State up to 12 weeks paid time off to care for a newborn or sick relative. Workers would receive 100% of their weekly paycheck, or up to $750 per week, and would be eligible for leave after at least 9 months of employment. These salaries would be paid out of a fund filled with employee contributions, about $1.50 to $2 a week, and administered by the state. Small businesses, however, are worried about being forced to grant 3 months off to employees.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
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 Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Planet Check. Planet Check.
He's the granola Ayatollah of canola. Charles Ford, founder of Grasoline Solutions, explains.
I just started writing rhymes while I was farming and doing the eco thing, so that's kind of how this all came about.
Ford spits the truth.
Now, Rudolf Diesel was no weasel, this we know to be true. He was an engineer and a humanitarian, too. He made it possible for us to drive on vegetable fuel. Nobody told me that, well, that's what I'm trying to do. It was back around the turn of last century when Dr. Diesel offered up this opportunity. Corn, soy, chicken, fats, and flour, flax, hemp, seed. Farmers could grow their own fuel, not only their feed. Small towns can be self-sufficient about their energy needs without drilling or spilling or paying a fee. It's like that.
Biodiesel reduces cancer-causing emissions by 75%. For more EcoWrap and all the 411 on biodiesel,
Grasoline.com. Check us out.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Cliff Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
All right, if you're just now tuning in thinking this is the beginning of the show, you are, well, you're almost right. We got an early start on it at half past six Eastern time. We've been at it for about a half an hour now. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On, a very special edition, coming to you live from downtown beautiful Florence, Alabama. Court Street, as a matter of fact, a place that, well, it's the place that I grew up. It's my native ground. And it's really exciting to be back. I hadn't been back in the Shoals for about 5 years until I came back helping out with Dad down here. The city was founded, 1818. Florence was founded a year before the state of Alabama was, largely as a function of the dispossession of the Native Americans here. You know, we have our blots. And then there's, you know, that little dust up in 1860, and not too awfully far from here is a military hospital from the Civil War. Down by the river's edge is a pyramid built by the native peoples, sometime around 3,000 years ago. You know, the savages. It's a fascinating place, and of course we are smack dab outside of Shaolin Computers right here on Court Street. These folks specialize in hand-built computers done expressly to one's own needs. Yeah. And it matters to, if you have ever gone to one of the big box stores, if you've ever gone to Wally World and bought a computer there, you know that it matters to know who you're dealing with when you buy one of these things, because they, you know, it's not just plug it in and walk away. We all know it's not as simple as it seems. Now, where do you want to go this evening? I started off with Porter Goss, and the fact that I'm intrigued with the notion that Ray McGovern upbraided Donald Rumsfeld yesterday, and boom, the director of the CIA's out today. I mean, okay, so maybe there's not a connection there, but can you dig the fact that okay, are these guys, are they incompetent in the White House? Did they not know that somebody somewhere would draw a line between those two dots? These guys get a little bit more social. Whether it's Scotty McClellan or Porter Goss or Brownie, don't forget about Brownie, or the Treasury Secretary. It goes on and on and on. The people who are really responsible for the problems are still there, but they are offering up a steady procession of sacrificial lambs in their stead. You see, does that make some sense to you? Goss, this is from the AP report. Goss also had some public missteps in March 2005, just before John Negroponte took over. John Negroponte, of course, you know his history, death squads in Central America, that was his specialty. Goss told an audience at the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library that he was overwhelmed by the many duties of his job, including devoting 5 hours at 5 hours out of every day to prepare for and deliver the presidential briefings. This was his quote. He said, The jobs I'm being asked to do, the five hats that I wear, are too much for this mortal. I'm a little amazed at the workload. We're talking about the director of the CIA, for God's sakes. I mean, he's not... Well, no, all work is honorable, and I don't... But this... It's not like, well, anybody put a gun to his head. And, of course, just 2 weeks ago, it was the firing of... the firing of Ms. What was her name? Mary McCarthy? McCarty? The lady who actually let the cat out of the bag on some of the dirty dealings that have been going on under the administration. And don't forget, as I mentioned, Paul Pillar, the guy who said, yeah, they lied us into a war, sure. They manipulated the information. It was all dummied up. It was ginned up. And then today, Porter Goss resigns. You know, I don't know. I'm thinking I'm the White House Chief of Staff. I'm Josh Bartlett. I'm going to tell Porter Goss, okay, you know, because, you know, it's not like he left and, you know, said I quit and walked out the door and slammed the door behind him. You know, let's let this simmer for a couple of days because this ain't going to look good. But no, not them. And that's what I'm getting at. These people are incompetent. As I noted last night, we have ascribed to them evil genius qualities, but it turns out they're more like Boris Badenov and Natasha. Something less than competent. But of course, they're Republicans, so we don't expect competence from them. It's not their strong suit. So there's that. The vacant job of domestic policy advisor has not yet been filled either. First day with the rented lips. You know, Andrew Card's out, Josh Bolton's in, Carl Rove's out, doesn't have policy coordination, Joel Kaplan has that. This is a Soviet purge, pure and simple. They're working on a model that we never expected we would see in effect in the United States, and it's kind of pathetic. It's shameful. Congressman David Obey, Democrat from Wisconsin, he called it good news that Porter Goss was quitting. Quote, his management style has been wrecking the country's most important intelligence agency. I hope that whoever's selected to take his place will rebuild agency morale and competence. Well, you know, Congressman Obey, you need to hope in one hand and in the other one and see which one fills up first. Because you're not going to get a better guy, you're not going to get a good guy, you're not going to get a competent guy out of this, you're going to get a crony. These guys do cronies. It's what they know how to do, for God's sakes. Oh, this is too cool. I get background music tonight. John Fox would be into this. So far, I've got a harp and an acoustic guitar. This is excellent. I don't know where the bongos went, though. Give me a minute and I'll start singing the blues. Tell you what, let's go ahead and take our break. If you want to get involved with the program, don't sit there and be a shrinking violet. Get with it. Pick up the phone. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Bob Kincaid, head on. Yo.
Discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2-4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
Look, Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem. even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Oh, it's gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
When it rains, all my friends go away.
God doesn't like me anymore.
The wind could come and take your house. Santa won't know where to find me. Mommy scared the sky.
What's going on in the mind of a child who's lived through a hurricane?
You can drown in your bed if you fall asleep.
Talk to them. Reassure them. We can help. Call 1-800-789-2647 to make sure they move on healthy and happy. That's 1-800-789-2647. Trained and caring people are ready to assist you 24 hours a day. It's confidential and free. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday night. It's a beautiful Friday night in Florence, Alabama on Court Street. Nice guitar going on behind me. And if you've got something you'd like to bring to the program, by all means, jump right in. That's the way we operate here. Almost halfway tempted to take the microphone in and just do some of the music. No, it's the odd, it's the underreported, the strange that I love to jump on, bring out in case folks might not have caught it. And I mentioned Mary Bono a little bit ago, and you gotta dig this. This is just this is too much. I'll tell you what, Agnes tells me we've got a caller on the line. We've got Andy calling in from Wales for our usual Friday evening chat. Let's see if we can pull this off. Hey, Andy, you're Head On. Okay, try it, Andy.
Hello, you there, mate?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, cool. I think the background music is interfering as such, possibly.
Okay, Agnes, you stand by, Andy. Agnes, you've got Andy a little too clippy. I can't make out what he's saying.
Okay, how's that?
Ah, much better, much better.
Okay, cool, yeah. Yeah, I've got to admit that you're clipping a little bit, I see. But anyway, yeah, how's things, man? You okay?
Oh, I'm doing real good. This is a lot of fun. It's we're doing it on the fly. I've never taken the show outdoors and never taken it, well, really on the road at all. And it's working surprisingly well so far, I think.
Well, yeah, it's the first road out is going to be rough, isn't it? So, you know, iron out all the things, and the next one will be a lot easier. Still there, Bob?
Yeah, I'm still here.
wicked. Yeah, no, I was just saying it's going to be easier the next time out because you know what you're up to this time. So.
Yeah, it's gonna get easier as we go along, and we have plans, Andy, to be taking the show to some really interesting venues along the way, and we've got to make it work first. So this is a great little experiment.
Well, you never know if we can arrange some sort of press pass for the festivals. I'll go and record some of the UK festivals and get them on the show and stuff like that. We can go to some live music, the big jazz festival in Brecon up here. You know, we can work things out like that. You can have some international events.
I tell you what, Andy. The background music is such that I can't hear diddly.
Right, no worries, man. Well, I tell you what, I'll give you a ring during the week or something next week.
Okay, I'm like I said, I'm terribly sorry.
No, that's cool, man. No worries. I'll speak to you next week.
Cool,
man. Bye, mate.
All right, Andy. Take care. Have a good morning. Well, this is like I said, this is a learning experience. This may be mostly me for the evening, just because of circumstances beyond my control. But I don't know. I'll let you know how things turn out. No, Mary Bono. I mentioned her a few minutes ago, and I really do want to share this with you. Caught it, yes. Okay. Okay. I think we're going to have a little bit of this out and back and that kind of thing. That's part of the process. Now, from Raw Story, came up yesterday. Mary Bono. Now, well, first of all, a little bit of background. I'm reading a new biography, or not a new biography, but a biography of Mark Twain that received some favorable notice in the last year or so. And along the way, he makes the reference of the very young Samuel Clemens going into the House of Representatives to observe proceedings there. And he wrote a letter back, one of the very few letters he wrote as a very young man, in which he noted that members of Congress were paid $8 a day. $8 a day to, for their services and rendering their wisdom and deliberative efforts to the country. $8 a day, okay? And this is pre-Civil War, maybe 1855, something, 1858, somewhere along in there. Maybe even earlier. $8 a day to be a member of Congress. Okay, Shakespeare said, "What's past is prologue." Sit down for this one. This is just too daggum much. There are precious few people in the United States of America who at some time or another don't look at their bank balance or their whatever and make hard decisions about what they can and cannot do between now and payday. Right? Sure. This is from Roll Call via Raw Story. One of those hit your head on the microphone moments. Mary Bono, who is the widow of Sonny Bono. Bono. Let's see. Bono, YouTube. Bono. Yeah, Sonny Bono. Mary Bono. She's a member of Congress from California. She was married to Sonny Bono, God knows why. And she has made a claim before a House committee, wait for it, that a congressional salary won't pay for college. And Roll Call reports as follows. Maybe Representative Mary Bono voted for that pay raise last year because her annual salary of, remember, $18.50, $8 a day? Her annual salary of $165,200 just won't be enough to pay for her 18-year-old son, Cheshire? Better known as Chez, to go to college. She makes $165,200. In a hearing of the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Consumer Protection on Wednesday afternoon, Mary Bono said, and I quote, "I could not afford college for my son if Sonny's royalties were not paying for it." Bono also mentioned that she recently bought new cars for herself and Chez, both of which needed satellite radio and Bluetooth capabilities. And I can't, I can't get my head around the thinking of people like that. What is going on in what passes for Mary Bono's mind? According to Bono spokeswoman Kimberly Collins, Chez plans to attend the University of Southern California, after all, which is, after all, a private institution, this coming fall. Although he can't even be admitted before he's achieved a... he can't even get into USC without taking some remedial coursework. And Mary Bono says that she can't afford to send him to college at $165,200 a year. $165,200, and Mary Bono says that if it wasn't for the royalties coming in on I Got You, Babe, that her poor little son would just have to graduate high school and go to work at Jack in the Box or something. You there? I mean, I don't mean there. I mean, do you get the... Now, they've got Mary Bono down as a Democrat in the roll call article. I'm pretty sure she's not. I'm guessing no, because I remember the impeachment hearings, and she was on the side of let's have a look inside that man's zipper. She was part of the Republican sex crimes unit that was going after Bill Clinton. Remember? Sure. Great heavenly days. $165,200 a year will not pay for college for one kid. Now, if she's telling the truth, and if that is in fact the case, we got, you know, what's the line? We got trouble in River City, because won't be anybody going to college whose parents are making $50,000 a year either. But I suspect that it has more to do with that new car with the satellite radio and the Bluetooth technology than it does with $165,200 a year, plus perks, plus health care, plus living allowance, plus benefits, plus retirement. Mary Bono needs to leave Congress. She obviously needs to go somewhere that she can make a whole lot more money, doesn't she? So do a lot of other members of Congress. And you know right where they'll go. They'll become lobbyists, and they will make it. You know, maybe then she can afford to send her kid to college. This is pathetic. What a slap in the face. Where is her constituency? Is she from Orange County or something? One of those ugly little Republican bastions? I said bastions. I don't know. So that's what you're dealing with the Republican Party. I'm sorry. It's another day. Today it's Mary Bono. 2004 it was Porter Goss saying that he wasn't competent to be in the CIA. 2 months later he's nominated as director of the CIA, and the Senate goes, "Oh yeah, it'd be great, brother." Well, it's coming up on 28 and a half minutes after the hour. This is a very special edition of Head On, coming to you live from the streets of Florence, Alabama, Court Street, to be precise. Near the corner of Court and Mobile Street, I might add. And I'm having a heck of a lot of fun. When we come back, a little follow-up. You remember the Bay County, Florida boot camp incident? A little follow-up on that. You know, well, I don't know about the phone number yet. We'll work on that. But at any rate, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. This is, in fact, Head On Radio.
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Okay. Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
What does Alison Krauss remember about music class when she was a kid?
My fondest memory of music class is kind of just an overall memory, not a specific instance, because music was something completely different than any other class in school. It was, I remember it as all being fun, and the reward wasn't, you know, a great test score, and it wasn't a higher grade. It was getting to be a part of an ensemble and singing something at the end where everybody knew their part. It was all fun and games to me, and you made friends. You know, I found that you made friends that lasted really long time. At least the ones that, for me, that have lasted the longest are ones that I met in school chorus or in music classes, and not who I sat next to in math.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
Welcome back to Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. And as you can tell, this is what you say when you're on a paid remote. Hey, there's a lot going on down here. But there really is. Some pretty good musicians operating behind me and folks wandering by. You know, Florence is about, 36, 37,000 people. And it really is a matter of the town putting its best foot forward. A lot of people out on the sidewalks. Looks like it probably looked about 40 years ago when everybody had a job here. Back then, I grew up the son of a furnace foreman at Reynolds Metals Company. The Tennessee Valley Authority was here. The International Fertilizer Development Center was and is still here. Ford Motor Company was here. All manner of industry clustered up and down the Tennessee River because some of the cheapest power in the entire country, the cheapest power in the entire country was right here because of the hydroelectric stations made up by the dam system of the Tennessee Valley Authority along the Tennessee River. That all changed, in the late 1970s. Because what changed was, among other things, the energy crisis in the mid 70s was sort of a heads up that things were going to get weird, things were going to get different, and then the Tennessee Valley Authority, in a stroke of really non-wisdom, decided nuclear power was the way to go. And roughly 18 miles from here is a little establishment known as Brown's Ferry Nuclear Plant. And at one time, it was the largest single nuclear reactor on Earth. 20 years or so ago, we almost had our very own little Chernobyl when some folks were checking for, get this, those of you who have worked in industrial situations, when a guy was checking for gas leaks in gas lines, and of course you're going to do that in that kind of a situation, but they were doing it with a candle. Yes, Lord, yes, a candle. They were checking for it with a candle. Had a fire, and, you know, but building those nuke plants that the TVA uniformly could not get to generate power to any appreciable degree cost a whole lot of money, caused power bills to go up, and then the general economic turndown that came, with Ronnie Reagan, and Reynolds dried up, Ford dried up, Union Carbide dried up, everything that had caused this place to be somewhere dried up. And families that had been making $50,000 a year found themselves making, if they were lucky, 20, 12, in some cases, nothing. A lot of people had to pack up and leave. There's a reason that I don't like Republicans. There's a darn fine reason that I don't like Republicans. I have been beneficiary is a little too sarcastic, but I have been right in the middle of Republican politics, it seems like, every time I turn around. And, well, let's see, I'm trying to think. I came back from my first year in college, came home from Missouri to here, thinking, I'll get some kind of job. You know, just something to pay for, something to cover date money. That's, Agnes, that's all pre you, dear. There wasn't anything here. There was nothing. At one point in time, this area had it had an unemployment rate that was exceeded only by Detroit, Michigan, in the collapse of the American auto industry of the late 70s. Because we were downstream from the auto industry. My father made silicon metal, which was alloyed to aluminum, which went into the engine blocks that Ford and Chevrolet used for the so-called aluminum blocks. Because straight aluminum won't stand the strain. So that's what I know. That's where I come from. I've seen the Reagan economic miracle. The reason that where I am this evening is so exciting is because there is life coming back onto the main drag of Florence. There's traffic going on up and down the road. There are people walking by on the sidewalks. There's several nice restaurants. This very forward-thinking computer shop in front of which I'm operating, Shaolin Computers, shaolincomputers.com. This is the resurgence of a place that bills itself as a Renaissance city, named by the guy who laid out Florence, Alabama, Ferdinand Sinoner. Laid it out in, I guess, 1817. It was built in 1818, incorporated in 1818. Ferdinand Sinoner was from Firenze on the river, help me out here, Arno, the river Arno. And this place sits on a river as well, the Tennessee. And in 1818, he thought the finest thing in the world he could do would be to name the new city that he had just laid out after his mother city. And to this day, not too far from here, is Sinoner Avenue. and it was an outpost for Andrew Jackson as he moved south to slaughter the brownish red people who had been here for 28,000 years. Jackson Highway runs through this area, and if you stop and read the military markers, you'll find it's Jackson's Military Highway. And as it would turn out later, there was a burgeoning wagon factory here in Florence, and a buggy whip factory here in Florence. And with the rise of the automobile, the outrage of the buggy whip manufacturers was palpable. Damn that Henry Ford. Damn him. That little contraption of his ain't never going to go nowhere. Where would you drive it? You ain't going to take one of them things out where a mule can't go. And, you know, so again, I've learned the lesson of the buggy whip manufacturers firsthand. And so when you hear those PSAs about if you sing happy birthday in a restaurant, you're stealing. I know what that means. Because that's just another, the Recording Industry Association of America. That's just another bunch of buggy whip manufacturers. Screaming about that confounded Henry Ford and his ugly little contraption. Only this time, the ugly little contraption is inside your computer. I guess this is a bit of a ramble. But I love this place. And I love what I'm seeing this evening, and I'm excited about what I'm seeing this evening, because I'm watching it. It is, in many ways, like watching America wake up again. Stand by. I think we can do something here. I've got a speaking of my youth and so forth, let's see if we can make this work.
Hi, Bob.
Try it again.
Hi, Bob.
Oh, yeah, you're there. Okay. I'm joined by a very good friend, actor, artiste, and reference librarian, yes. Kyle Weir. As it turns out, we were roommates in the hospital, in the maternity ward, in January of 1963.
Quite literally side by side.
Yes.
In those days, they arranged the...
Yep.
And beside each other.
Yep, because there was no L kid, no M kid, mm-hmm. no N, no O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, or V.
There might have been a D.
No, there was no... There was, no, side by side.
Okay.
So, yeah. The Kincaid kid was next to the but
regardless, we go back a long way.
We do indeed, and as I said, you're the reference librarian for this area, Kyle. Is there anything that I have said that has been less than accurate about the history of this place?
Well, I didn't catch everything that you were saying, since we are out on the street here. Now, I found myself saying hello to some of the locals, so I missed part of it.
Locals like yourself, yeah. That was the Halliburton Wagon Factory, wasn't it?
Essentially, it was. But then with the advent of automobiles, you know, certainly by the onset of World War II, I think it actually closed in 1947,
it lasted that long?
I believe it was that long. There's a wagon festival coming up in the next few weeks.
Is there really? Well, by Jove, we'll have to try this again if I'm still here.
And if there happen to be the local listeners, there's out there right now, if you come by the Florence Public Library, you'll see a small-scale replica of an old Florence wagon in our local history department.
Well, speaking of wagons.
And here we go. Buggy rides in downtown Florence.
Yep. And he's got a buggy whip.
Yes, he does.
I tell you what, I'm being signaled that it is time for us to take a break, and we will do that. I was having trouble fielding phone calls earlier, but It sounds like things have calmed down a little bit. There might be a remote chance of actually taking a phone call or two. So if you want to jump in and give it a try, I'm not making any promises, but have a shot at it. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. This is Conversation Radio for a new era, and a new era dawning in Florence, Alabama. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world without their smiles or their laughter? A world where children don't play or sing or dream or imagine?
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we can't imagine a world without children. That's why we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children everywhere. Diseases like cancer, pediatric AIDS, and sickle cell. And we won't stop until every child is cured and every disease is defeated. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
Finding cures, saving children. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. To learn how you can help, call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to our website, stjude.org.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
Hi, I'm Joanne Woodward. Ever notice how many things in life happen in a circle? The seasons, revolving credit, hula hoops, the spinning of the circle we call Earth, and recycling. Together we've already made a difference. Sorting glass, plastic, separating cans, stacking newspapers. Now there are lots of products made from things we've already recycled. A paperclip, in a more daring life, a 56 convertible. A cereal box, once your Sunday paper. It all goes back to the circle. It starts when we recycle trash at home and at work. It's completed when we buy products made from recycled materials. How do you know the difference? Check the label for something called post-consumer recycled content. Then buy the highest percentage of it you can find. You'll save a tree, you'll save energy, and in your own way, you'll help save the world. Complete the circle.
For your free Buy Recycled shopping guide, call 1-800-2-RECYCLE. A message from the Ad Council and Environmental Defense. Finding the ways that work.
All right, we are back here in beautiful downtown Florence with Florentines walking up and down the sidewalk in front of me. Across the street, gorgeous Art Deco architecture from probably, the 1920s even. An author named T.S. Stribling from this area won the Pulitzer Prize in 1933 for a novel by the name of The Store. The Store. And the story he was talking about was Rogers Department Store, which I'm staring at here, that was just an anchor, an absolute anchor in this area until such time as, Republican economic policies sledgehammered the place one more time. Bear in mind that as I talk about this area, please understand this place became something as a direct and proximate result of liberal, progressive, Democratic Party politics. This place came to be something because of the river, and because of the river as a direct result of the Tennessee Valley Authority that checked the flooding, that provided, what electricity was had around here was had by the haves and not the have-nots until such time as the hydroelectric power began turning the turbines in the Wilson Dam and literally brought this entire area to life. I was raised on this stuff. Do you understand? I'm looking at a town that rose up because of liberalism, because of progressivism. Conservatism never—it's done things to this town, but conservatism has never done anything good for this town. This town was built by liberal politics. Pure and simple. Okay, I'm feeling experimental. Let's see if we can take a call. Our good friend Joe Vecchio is calling in from Atlanta. Agnes, can you bring him on? I'll do everything I can to listen.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, Joe. Yourself?
I'm doing great. I'm glad we can get the connection through here. How's things in lovely Florence?
Oh, I tell you what, I'm excited to be here, Joe, because like I said, it would be the same thing for you going home to the city. It stirs your soul somehow. You can never fully leave the place that you grew up in.
Well, I hear you. You know, and it's really interesting to hear people talk about, the Deep South and the little towns you have all over. And of course, I grew up in friggin' Brooklyn, New York. You know, I mean, we have more people living in our block than you have living in some of these cities out there. You know, and I spent some time up in Montana where they have some really small population. So it's very much of a different world, because you go into a place like New York and you can really, if you look at it, even though it's a real big city, there's a lot of little neighborhoods that are kind of very inclusive. And I don't want to mean like they don't want anybody else in, but they have their own little atmospheres and their own little flares. And you can actually live in a very small part of it and never even see the rest of the city. And some people really like that in New York, where they live in just a very small area.
Well, you know, Joe, you remind me of something. A long, long time ago, I read John Irving's The World According to Garp.
Great book.
And in there is, and it made enough of an impression on me that 20 years later, I still remember the line. The remark is made that even New York is a small town when you get right down to it.
Right.
Because it's neighborhoods. And it's communities within a community.
And here was the thing. It was really weird because we would play a little street game on the streets on Hart Street where I live. And you could go up one block and you didn't know any of the kids there. We didn't play with any of the kids on any of them. We played with the kids who lived on our block. You go two blocks over, one block over, And it was a completely different neighborhood, completely different world. You didn't know anybody there. They didn't know you. But they all played the same game. All these weird little Brooklyn street games that we had that apparently were brought over by immigrants who came over from Europe.
You know, I've always heard that people growing up in New York played stickball. I must admit, I've never played a game of stickball in my life.
But we either play a lot of stickball, and we played lots of variations on baseball, like punchball and pitching in and stuff like that. But we also had our own little unusual games, like Cocolaria or Skelzies or Three Steps to Germany, all these weird little games. I don't know where they came up with the rules for them. But I always used to imagine what it would have been like growing up in a small town. You know what? I'm not sure I could have handled it because you get so used to the environment that you live in. And, you know, I'm very happy that, and you were talking about, you know, your dad, and I was thinking about how my dad was a simple, unskilled laborer. He worked for the city of New York, and he helped just fill the potholes in on the bridges and on the roads and stuff like that. And it paid, I think, something like $6.50 an hour. And on that one salary, this is like in 1965, 66, on that one salary, he could support a family of five. And you just can't do that these days.
Well, no, you can't, Joe. And, yeah, I guess there are a million reasons for it. But I'm prejudiced, and I grew up in a time when you could, just as you did. And I'd like to see that America again.
I just don't know. I don't know if we can go back to that. That's just the thing. I don't think we can reclaim that innocence.
Well, was it innocence or is it economics?
Well, it was a little bit of both. I mean, I grew up in a very closed world. We didn't really talk about the outside world very much. I mean, there was New York and there was us and family and there was everybody else. And of course, I was just a little kid. We left New York, I was like 15 years old. So maybe if I had grown up more there, I would have come to more of a maturity about, you know, where I lived and what I lived. I didn't learn a lot about New York until well after I left New York. You know what I mean? As far as the actual history of the city and all that stuff is concerned. And
sure.
The thing about it is, and you were talking about the Tennessee Valley Authority and all the wonderful things that the New Deal did for Southerners, and not just the TVA, but all the rural electrification stuff, where if that wasn't there, there would be places here in the Deep South that still probably wouldn't have electricity.
Well, exactly, and that was a direct result, Joe, of FDR and Democrats in Congress looking at the big power companies who absolutely did not want to take the time and effort, and we see some of this in internet broadband provision now. They didn't want to take the time and take the effort to bring transmitted electricity along lines into the country and
right.
into the rural areas because they didn't feel like they could make any money doing it, and
that's
the government
exactly
compelled
it.
Them to do it.
And it's the same way with the highways. I mean, what single company in this country could have built the interstate highway system? None of them, because it wouldn't have been profitable for them. But that's where the good melding of private and public industries work. The government sets up this infrastructure, and the business takes advantage of it. And all the stuff that the New Deal did on a national level, and a lot of people don't realize this, was started first in New York City. The birthplace of modern liberalism is New York City, because that's
Fiorello LaGuardia.
Yeah, I'm sorry?
No, I said Fiorello LaGuardia.
Well, LaGuardia and guys like Teddy Roosevelt and all the people before, all this stuff happened around the turn of the century. Jacob Riis' book, How the Other Half Lived, got a lot of people motivated to change things. A lot of people don't understand, and I hear a lot of Southerners talk bad about New York City, of course, having never been there. But what they don't understand is that all the things that happen that they take for granted started up there, and they don't see where we came from and understand how we had to grow up and how to live. You know what I'm saying? And how all the things that go on now as far as minimum wage and stuff like that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for New York City. They think that New York is like, you know, this big communist thing. But the truth of the matter is New York City was built entirely to make money. That was the only reason they ever existed. And they were the first ones to experience the effects of full-blown capitalism, which is why it became the way it became. And I think
I think you're absolutely correct, Joe. I tell you what, can you hang on for just a second? Let us get through the news. I'd like to continue this conversation a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be here.
Okay, great. Well, I'll tell you what. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Joe. I've got some technical issues worked out here. I'm learning. Okay. you know, it's a learning experience. If you want to jump in behind Joe, you're more than welcome to. The phone number, of course, is 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Doug Cunningham is off today. Last week, U.S. unemployment claims rose to their highest level since mid-November 2005. The Labor Department said on Thursday that 322,000 workers filed for unemployment last week, an increase of 5,000. The number of workers receiving unemployment benefits also rose to 2.46 million. That's an increase of 21,000, the highest level in 5 weeks. Overall, the unemployment rate remains at a five-year low of 4.7%. As hotels become more extravagant, injury rates have increased. That's according to a study by Unite Here called Creating Luxury, Enduring Pain. After examining 87 unionized hotels, including Hilton's, Hyatt's, and Marriott's, the study found that during the last 3 years, 30% of all injuries at hotels were experienced by housekeepers, a jump of 4% since 2001. The housekeepers experience injuries at twice the rate of other hotel workers. This year is important for Unite Here as the union faces multiple hotel contract expirations in major cities across the country. The union is hoping to use the nationwide expirations as leverage in helping raise wages and address many of the concerns raised in the study. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that the average take-home for a housekeeper in the United States is $17,310 per year.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
For the first time on record, child labor worldwide is on the decline. The International Labor Organization says that the number of workers under the age of 18 fell by 11% between 2000 and 2004, a drop of nearly 30 million. The biggest decline is in Latin America, where the number of child laborers has dropped by two-thirds in 4 years. And now with a special Workers Independent News sports report, here's Greg Gordon.
The NFL draft is over, but not everyone is cheering this entry-level form of hiring. The NFL, where all 32 owners share money, has created a system to divvy up college athletes that under most other circumstances would be illegal. The NFL is exempt from antitrust laws. College athletes with highly specialized skills have no say about where they ply their trade. The only way for a top athlete to exercise any control over where he goes is to insult the team that might draft him or play another sport. The present collective bargaining agreement ends in 2013. Here's the WIN Economic Report. A new Massachusetts bill would guarantee all workers in the Bay State up to 12 weeks paid time off to care for a newborn or sick relative. Workers would receive 100% of their weekly paycheck, or up to $750 per week, and would be eligible for leave after at least 9 months of employment. These salaries will be paid out of a fund filled with employee contributions, about $1.50 to $2 a week, and administered by the state. Small businesses, however, are worried about being forced to grant 3 months off to employees.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Treat me with understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Selling to your children every day. He's rotten evil, but he ain't nobody's fool. He's dealing death and living high off your hard-earned pay.
Oh, funny me. I actually thought we were going to have the hour two intro, but I guess maybe not. we're just making it up as we go along in some senses. And, you know, another thing I just realized I'm going to have to learn about and remember to take with me. Night is going to fall here before the show is over, and I don't have a light. Well, okay, I got that. Okay, I can operate by the light of the LCD of the computer and the little bleepy lights on the board. But the things you think about. Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend Joe Vecchio has kindly waited through the break to continue our conversation. Are you there with me, Joe?
I'm still here.
Wonderful. You were talking about the prejudice that is perceived that Southerners feel about, don't take it hard. It's not just New York City. It's the whole North.
Yeah, but New York City in particular is a target because that's kind of seen as, you know, that's all on the TV and stuff like that. And, I'm not going to lie. I mean, New Yorkers have just as bad of misconceptions about Southerners as Southerners have about Northerners. And I think some of it is just city country. Some of it is urban rural, you know. And it's just a very different lifestyle. It's very difficult for people to understand. Me having lived in both areas, kind of, sort of, I understand it a little better from both sides. I remember when I worked for NBC for the Olympics down here in Atlanta. And they had, and I was a driver. They just hired local people to be drivers. And a lot of the people there were, of course, from New York and stuff like that. And they were saying such nasty stuff about the South and Southerners that even I was forced to stand up and defend it a little bit. You know, because Atlanta is a nice city. Atlanta is a wonderful city. It's the biggest, most important city in the area. It's still got its head up its butt in a lot of different ways. But it's important, and it feels like it's important. And that attitude is very good for a city to have. You have to have that attitude, that feeling of superiority, if you want to do anything. But, they were dissing it so much that I was felt, you know, to defend it. Of course, you know, Atlanta screwed up a lot of things in the Olympics, but, you know.
Yeah, I do understand, Joe. And, of course, the other side of that, like, well, what I was when I was in high school, we had a kid move down here from Chicago, and having been a little bit around the country now, I recognize different accents. I was a much more provincial person back then, and I remember all of us just looking at him and going, "Where are you from?"
Mm-hmm.
We base a lot on how people talk, and you know, of course, when you know, I went to college in Missouri, and I had people from Iowa and so forth looking at me going, "You know, you people wear shoes down there, you know, huh?" You know, and they weren't kidding. They weren't kidding. I mean, you know, it was, you know, they wanted to know if I had to climb the phone pole to use the phone, just like in Green Acres.
Oh,
it's one of the things that I hate about those cornpone sitcoms of the 60s.
Well, you know, Green Acres doesn't even take place in the South. It takes place in the Northeast.
No. Green Acres is in the South.
Green Acres takes place in the Northeast in like a Vermontish type of area, because they're like that up there, too.
This is probably better suited for maybe a trivia show, but Bug Tussle and Pixley were where the Clampets went to. It was near home for them. It's technically sort of a vague corner of either Arkansas or Tennessee. There really is a Bug Tussle, I think.
I always got the impression that they were like from Vermont or something. They were in Vermont or someplace like that. Because, you know, if you ever travel to that part of the country, especially if you go to upstate New York or to Vermont or the upstate part of Connecticut, there are a lot of people that are like that. There's a lot of farm country up there, very conservative, very rural.
But you know, there's no doubt that, you know, there is a great debt owed here and all of rural America for the things that, that we consider the commonplace and ordinary now, Joe. And the question is, you know, as progressives, as liberals, is getting over that divisiveness. You know, this was the solid South until the civil rights movement came along, and you could not get elected in the deep South without an R by your name. You bring the civil rights movement along, and Lyndon Johnson himself acknowledged that this was the death of the Democratic Party in the South for a generation.
Well, it's hard to fight that kind of racism. You know, it's really hard to fight that. That's very inbred. I mean, you look at what happened in Serbia and Bosnia. That's been going on for a thousand years, you know, because when the Ottoman Empire invaded that part of Europe back, you know, a thousand years ago, and all those animosities remained. And the communists squashed them for a while because the communists kind of squashed everything in that area. But as soon as the commies were gone, guess what? They started fighting again. And I think we're going to see this in this country for a long, long time. And I think a lot of it happened because Lincoln was shot. I think if Lincoln had not been assassinated, it would have been very, very different. It would have been very different.
There's a possibility that that would have been the case because he might have followed through on his with animosity toward none, with charity for all viewpoint. But there was, you know, there was something coming, Lincoln or no Lincoln, and that was the rise of the corporate industrial state that had already been born. It's worth remembering that Lincoln, as a lawyer, Lincoln was a corporate lawyer. Lincoln was a railroad lawyer. Lincoln was actively engaged in putting people off of their land so the railroad could go through.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And well, you get your first big bout, your first big dose of corporate corruption in the presidencies that follow Lincoln, from the 1870s to the 1900s. That's, you know, that gave rise to Teddy Roosevelt and the Trust Busters.
Mm-hmm. And then they left the party when Roosevelt didn't go for a third term. The people who took over were basically going against everything he had been trying to build. And then he and a bunch of other progressives left the Republican Party, and then they left again. What little were left after 1936, or 34, after the congressional elections, after the New Deal. So, you know, it was a real big stampede out of the Republican Party, and ever since then, they have totally been the party of corporate power. It's been a slow move, but that's where it happened. And, you know, a lot of the things that happened through Teddy Roosevelt happened because of events like the Triangle White Shirt Fire, where I think like 22 or more than that people got killed because a sewing place got caught fire, and the people died because they couldn't leave because they had the doors locked. It was 5 minutes
right
before closing time, and they didn't want to have the doors open in case anybody left early. God forbid somebody should leave 5 minutes early. And we see a lot of that sort of attitude now. And the fact that we had the fire with the Tyson manufacturing plant not too long ago, a few years back. And the same thing happened. But it wasn't as bad because they still had regulations and people managed to get out the exits. But some people still died because they weren't following the regulations.
And now I remember being on the air a couple of years ago, and these stories come out every 6 to 9 months or so about the collapse of and it's the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory all over again. The only thing is it happens in Bangladesh.
Right.
Or southern China. And but if you take a humanistic viewpoint toward these things, you know, when you walk into Wally World, you're participating in that.
Yeah, and I try to keep explaining that to people, but they don't want to hear it. You know, all I hear is, I love Walmart. I love those low prices. And, you know, they don't understand what's going on. They don't care about Walmart stealing from their own employees. They don't care about what Walmart's doing to people in China and in Bangladesh and all those places because, you know, as far as they're concerned, it's the other side of the world. I get a cheap pair of underwear and I'm happy. And, you know, it's like that movie I saw. There's a high price for those low prices. There's a high cost to pay for that.
Well, there certainly is. So, you know, it's part of the reason for the existence of this whole undertaking, Joe. Whether it be your show, this show, whether it be Fourth Estate or Grace and Rama or All Things Reconsidered, it's an attempt to reach out to a divided nation. I mean, I know I get cranky and I call Republicans ugly names, and frankly, everything I say I believe. And maybe I'm taking away from the process a little bit. But you know what? I've got a lot of friends who are in various 12-step programs, and they have all told me almost with one voice, that the key to it all is that little banner that says truth spoken here. And I think that what we are engaged in, Joe, is nothing short of a national, perhaps even global intervention.
It's going to have to happen, man. I did a newspaper headline, a fake New York Times newspaper headline from 2032. And, you know, my times and dates are all screwed up. But the headline read, Humbled U.S. Awaits World's Verdict. And I'm waiting for the day when this country has a major either economic or military disaster that forces us to basically surrender to the other powers of the world in terms of economics or in terms of military, because we've screwed up things so badly.
Yeah, well, we saw a little dose of that, Joe. We saw it with Katrina. We saw there was a headline the other day, Dubai to grant, $25 million for Katrina relief? Mm-hmm. Dubai to the United States of America. You know, I'm glad they feel like helping out, but by the same token, dear God, Dubai is going to give...
And Cuba was offering to send doctors and stuff. You know, Cuba,
right,
for crying out loud.
Yeah, and this is because we have been in the sway of people, you know, when you count Reagan's two terms, that's 8 years, 4 years of George Herbert Bush, so far this nightmare that is George W. Bush, we have been in the sway of people who think that government's job is to be broken. Government's job is to be no government at all,
right.
So that when we watch people drown, for Christ's sakes, we're supposed to say what?
They're only brown people, Bob. That's just the deal. They're only brown people, and they don't count. They're not human. That's the way these people really feel. There's no sympathy. There's no concern. And whether it's brown people on the other side of the world or brown people in our own backyard, we just don't care. And that's the sad thing.
That day has dawned. You know, it took George Bush 3 days to acknowledge the South Pacific tsunami. It took him another couple of days to pony up more than some piddling couple of million bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and Katrina comes to our doorstep, and look at the nightmare that is. And we're in hurricane season already.
Well,
and another one may well come.
Well, look, this is government run by people who hate the very idea of government. And, you know, in fact, they might be intentionally wanting to do this just so they can say, see, government stuff never works. Which, of course, is nonsense. Government stuff works when it's run by people who believe in the idea of it and who understand the important and necessary balance between the government and private industry. And there is a balance. I'm a capitalist, man, you know. Liberals are capitalists. They believe in capitalism, but they believe that corporations have to be regulated. And they believe that the pie's got to be divided a little bit better than what it is. And sometimes you've got to put a gun to these people's heads in order to do it, you know, politically speaking, in order to do it, because otherwise they wouldn't do it.
Well, you know, Joe, for me, this is very pleasant and very enlightening for me, what I'm seeing here this evening, people walking by on the streets, on the sidewalk. It's a kind of America that I'm not used to seeing very much anymore, especially because I'm isolated and rural where I am in the beautiful hills of West Virginia. This kind of thing doesn't go on a lot. But there's also something about it when you see it going on that you can't help wondering if you're watching the promenade deck of the Titanic.
Right, right. Well, you know, I'm all for the people of Alabama. I'm all for the people of West Virginia. I mean, this is a New Yorker talking, and I've been around the world. I've lived on both sides of either ocean in this country, and I've seen a lot of different things in a lot of different places. And one thing I've discovered is that everybody is basically the same. And I am all for the people of Alabama and West Virginia. And sometimes I wish they could just wake up and see that they are being taken advantage of by people whose only interest is picking their pockets. And while I had the problems with the Democratic leadership, they are nothing compared to what the Republicans are doing. And the Republicans love this divisiveness because it only helps them. Listen, before I forget, I want to talk about this too, because we had that incident here in Atlanta yesterday with Rumsfeld, and one of the ladies that got arrested, Gloria, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, she's going to be back on and she's going to be talking about her experiences there.
Oh, excellent.
Being pulled out. So we're going to have her to talk about that on my show tomorrow night.
Well, that's great. And you know, while you're here, let's do talk about that for a couple of minutes, because one of the things that I opened the program with, Joe, was, and, you know, maybe it's tinfoil hat stuff, but does it strike you as a little bit odd, maybe just a little itty-bitty bit odd, that you have criticism of, I mean, and that wasn't just criticism. That was a trip to the woodshed that Ray McGovern gave Rumsfeld.
And Rumsfeld was just lying. I mean, he said straight out on TV, we know where the weapons are. He didn't qualify it. It was a straight, we know where they are. And of course, and he denied it right there, bold-faced lying.
Yeah, and so he gets upbraided in front of God and everybody. The article comes out in El País in Spain by an interview with Paul Pilar, formerly of the CIA, where he explains that they were lying. So, you know, this is two CIA guys. This isn't a couple of liberal talkers over the internet, pushing electrons around. These guys know what they're talking about. That goes down, and the very next day, Porter Goss suddenly feels like he needs to spend more time with his family.
Well, that may be, but it's also the big prostitution ring. You notice nobody in the American press talked about the prostitution scandal that he's caught up in.
I may have even missed it, Joe.
Oh yeah, that's the whole thing with he's all caught up with the Cunningham thing. Basically, what Republicans were doing was getting right at the Watergate Hotel too. Irony of ironies. They were getting hookers for favors, baby. That's the way the Republican Party works. Hookers for favors, because, you know, Republicans can never get laid any other way anyway.
Exactly.
Gloria got a ticket, and a couple other people got tickets, and, I forget his name, Armstrong? Was it Armstrong? Whoever the guy was, he just went right up there. And these people tell such bald-faced lies. And you know what? There's 33% of the people who still believe them. You know, you couldn't take a nail and pound the note into their head backwards so they can see it in a mirror that they're being lied to. They wouldn't believe it. And I think part of it is maybe they have to disbelieve it because in order to realize what they've been doing all these years, it would destroy them.
Yeah, well, they're entirely emotionally, everything else, invested in what they did in the voting booth. They bought the lies. And for a group of people that are so big on repentance, I'm not, you know, they don't seem to be that engaged in the notion of it for themselves.
Well, you know, I have a nemesis on my regular blog, guy by the name of Bruce Lewis, nice enough guy, I actually know him personally. And he buys into all of this too, and I just keep telling him, look, you're the big Catholic. You're the one who believes in judgment after death. You can lie to me. Maybe you can lie to yourself, but if there is a judgment, you ain't going to be able to lie to God. You know what I mean? I mean, you can sleep the sleep of righteousness all you want, but remember that last one's a doozy.
Yeah, exactly. Theoretically, it'll catch up with them. You know, that's their gig, not necessarily mine or yours.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know about the afterlife, but I do know this. If I do face a judgment, I can face whatever judgment because I can look into myself and be honest with who I am, screw-ups and all. I mean, I know how screwed up I am, okay? And I know when I'm making an honest mistake, and I know when I'm just saying something to be mean or you know, anything along those lines. And I know how I feel inside, and I know, you know, what I'm going through, and I'm not passing judgment on anybody. And if I can do that for myself, if I can look in the mirror and say that, then I can pass any judgment, you know.
Well, exactly. And that sort of ties in with some of the stuff I've talked about, you know, the concept of sin that's out there. You know, an honest mistake is not a sin.
Right.
Telling a bunch of lies that engage literally hundreds of thousands of people in doing evil to people who had done no evil to them. That's the definition of sin. You know, in that time 2,000 years ago, you know, when you've got 20,000 members of the Roman legions and they're marching on Jerusalem and they kill everybody in sight, that's a sin.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of investment in this, Joe, and I really hope that even though we're kind of rough on folks from time to time, that somehow we can engage a dialogue, that we can start a conversation that will hopefully at some point lead to a changing of attitudes.
Well, I only hope we can do that after we get these guys out of power. I mean, and that's just the whole thing. I mean, you can't have a dialogue with them while they have the power because they'll just use it to beat you up with. They'll use it to throw you in jail, and they'll use it to have you killed. You know, if it's
there's truth in that, and.
Hello, you
a couple
there?
Of times on, Yeah, I'm here. I'm right here.
I lost it for a second.
Oh, sorry. There's gonna be a realignment. I caught a Republican congressman from Maryland named Roscoe Bartlett. Sounds like something out of a sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy was, you know, and he had his little graphs and his charts, and he was talking at length. And this is a Republican, mind you, talking at length about peak oil. I've never seen that happen in the well of the House before. And, you know, he wasn't just laying it out in syrupy little terms and, you know, maybe peak oil's real, maybe it's not real. You know, he was laying out a scary, scary scenario that smacks of truth. And this guy's a Republican? How can you stand, you know, you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. How can he stand to be that anymore?
I keep thinking about the former governor of Alabama there and about how he took a look at his state and realized that this can't work the way we're doing things. And, you know, he said, listen, we need to start raising taxes on the rich. And I know exactly what happened after that is that every right-wing radio show guy got on the air and screamed, raising taxes, raising taxes, raising taxes, even though his policies would have actually lowered taxes for the working poor. The working poor voted against him, and they kicked him out of office. And
Right. Well, no, he's still in office. His name's Bob Riley, and he's running for his life right now. The primary in Alabama is on June 6th.
Okay, I thought he was kicked out.
Yeah, no. He is. He's running in the primary against none other than Judge Roy Moore.
Oh boy, yeah.
Ten Commandments boy.
Yeah, I know. One of the really insane religious fanatics.
Yeah, and I'm hoping maybe that enough of a tide has turned that Moore doesn't have a chance.
I'm so cynical and skeptical. I'm always kind of a wait and see type of guy at this point. I don't like to predict anything positive. As you know, I'm predicting that we're not even going to retake the House in 2006. And then basically I'm hoping to be proved wrong. I'm praying to be proved wrong, but everything has gone so bad in the last 25 or 30 years. It's hard to see anything positive. And I keep thinking the light at the end of the tunnel is an oncoming train, you know?
Well, yeah, and I remember the late, great Hunter S. Thompson's remarks that the hog is in the tunnel,
right,
and he's traveling on a road of bones. And that seems kind of like where we are. Joe, thanks so much for everything you offered. I always enjoy chatting with you. And break a leg tomorrow night. I'm really proud to have the show part of the Head On Radio Network. And continued prosperity and continued growth, because we're hearing a lot of good things about it.
Well, I'm proud to be part of it, man, and I hope somebody starts really paying attention, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. Thank you very much, Joe, and have a great evening.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now. Our good friend Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe radio show, Saturday nights, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, right here on the Head On Radio Network. That's headonradionetwork.com. We're also chatting in the chat room of the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. Click on chat room, register. It's easy, it's free, and it really is an enhancement of the whole real-time experience of the program. A lot of fine people in there. Jump right in and enjoy yourselves. If you listen on a podcast or through the archives at whiterosesociety.org, the thing's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Wander on in. You never know who you're going to run across. It's a boatload of fun. And a reminder for you, before we do go to the break, I updated you a while back. Our good friend Shelby LePre took a humongous lightning hit at the home studios of radiopower.org, and it wiped out a whole bunch of extremely expensive equipment. She is still hard at work on a fundraiser. Needs to raise about $5,000. If you've got a little bit that you can spare in between the rest, everybody needs something. We're liberals. We don't have the dude in the limousine, you know, coming by to pick us up and take us to the Watergate Hotel for fun and frivolity. Everybody needs a little help. She's trying to raise $5,000, and we're ever so grateful for the services of RadioPower.org, because this program, for instance, will be replayed sometime tomorrow, and then Tuesday through Friday we're on from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time in a replay of the previous day's program, and it means an awful lot to us. So if you can help out Shelby, do please. Meantime, let's come back afterwards. Let's see what your thoughts are. Things are working with the phones. God knows I'm grateful. Agnes, you are such an angel. She's still not feeling real good, and she's still right there behind the board. I mean, this is, you know, this is Casey Jones with his hand on the switch. You know what I mean? Intrepid does not begin to describe what my darling Agnes is. So we'll come back, and when we do, your phone calls are more than welcome. 877, the number 4, head-on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head-On Radio Network.
Picture a Stonewall Jackson above my head. Then Daddy came in to kiss his little man, with gin on his breath and a Bible in his hand. He talked about honor and things I should know. Then he'd stagger a little as he went out the door. I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess. We're all gonna be what we're gonna be. So what do you do with good old boys like me?
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2 new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? This is Olivia Newton-John. As soon as you get your diagnosis, you can go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Hi, I'm Janice Ian. Do you remember how excited you were at the start of summer every year and how the summer just started to drag on after a few months and you couldn't wait to get back to school, see your old friends, make new friends, get new books and a new locker and a clean slate? Well, you should have been excited about music class, too, because that was a special room where you went to sing, perform with your friends, and learn all kinds of interesting stuff about great composers, instruments, different kinds of music and songs. We remember our music teachers because they were so passionate about helping us learn to love music. They helped to spark a love for listening to notes and voices and rhythms that continues to enrich our lives even today. I bet your kids feel the same way about music class. Ask them, and make sure they get involved with music in school and in their lives.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. Music, part of a sound.
In the beginning, there was dirt, water, and air.
And it was good. Once. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel. Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at CliffBar.com.
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
We're gonna take you up to McNary County, Tennessee. Back in the days when Sheriff Buford Pusser ran things around there. Sheriff Buford Pusser was trying to clean up McNary County, Tennessee from all them bootleggers that was bringing crime and corruption and illegal liquor into his little dry county. And for his troubles, he got ambushed. And his wife was murdered, and his house got blown up, and they made a movie about it called Walking Tall.
Hey, welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Oh, man, what a beautiful evening this has turned into. The sun crept behind the buildings to the west, so it's not right in my face. The clouds have gone away. Folks still wandering up and down the sidewalk here in beautiful old Florence, Alabama. Lauderdale County, formed in 1819. The city formed in 1818. Built on the bluffs overlooking the mighty Tennessee River, and it is a gorgeous place, and this is the kind of place that the Head On Radio Network needs to reach. This is what I mean when I say conversation radio with a southern exposure. This is the beginning of the American healing, but Joe Vecchio is probably very much right insofar as. The healing really can't begin until we get the thugs out of power, because they have proven themselves very much, well, hell, look at the last 6 years. Enough said. So we'll start healing after we've Republicans' checkbook away and put a few of them in prison. Is there any doubt that Donald Rumsfeld needs to be wearing orange at this point, that Dick Cheney needs to be wearing orange? I mean, it's okay. He can have his defibrillator in prison. I don't mind. And I used to think it would be enough to just let George Bush go back to Crawford and cut brush or something, but I've come to the conclusion he needs to be in prison too. How about you? If you want to get in on the conversation, like I said, the phones are working quite nicely now. 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. I welcome you to do so. And drop by the website and spin the hit counter a little bit for the folks who have been so kind as to provide me the bandwidth to make the show happen. And that is Shaolin Computers, Shaolin, ShaolinComputers.com. And they will soon be expanding their business base into internet-based sales. We're talking about handcrafted computers, not quite handcrafted in the same way that, say, a Cuban cigar is handcrafted, but handcrafted nonetheless. And there are some beautiful examples of their work in there. And you know me, I'm a gadget freak, and I really want one of those clear Lucite or whatever it is, neon lit up computer boxes. Those are just cool, and I'm simple. It is a lot of fun being down here, though, and I'm not, this place moves me, whether it's the music, whether it's, the Muscle Shoals sound. This is the Shoals area of Alabama. Muscle Shoals proper is across the river from me, as is Sheffield and Tuscumbia. But this whole area has been absolute artistic magic. For over 100 years, beyond any shadow of a doubt, it's absolutely magic. And places like this, and there are places like this all across the country, deserve better than what we're getting. They deserve a real infrastructure. They deserve roads. They deserve a chance for the interior cities to prosper and not be left to die. across the way from me, I mentioned Sheffield, Alabama. You drive through Sheffield, it's a ghost town, and the storefronts are boarded up, or they have holes through the glass. It's the same. You know, you can see it all over the country. This is it's what's happened to our city centers with the Walmartizing and the mallizing of America. But this is where America happens. America happens in the country. It happens on our farms, the small family farms. It happens in our neighborhoods. It happens in towns where people can walk around and know each other. Even if like Joe mentioned, in New York City or Brooklyn, where you only know the kids on your own block because there's so many of them, still it's an opportunity to have community. And we have subdivisions now, and they're even happening here. I've seen them all over the South as I've driven down here from the beautiful hills of West Virginia. I've seen these, and they go for $275,000, $350,000, and they're nice looking places. But you can literally take a Swiffer, lean out your window, and break your neighbor's window glass with one. Nothing more than a mop handle. They're crammed on top of each other. And people will move into those homes and maybe know their next-door neighbor and have no clue of who the person two doors down is. And that is sad, and that is not America. And frankly, you know, it's not human. Human beings were not made out to live that way. We're not meant to live in isolation. It really does take a village, and I don't care what the wingnuts say. It does. When we interact with one another, we are the better for it. As long as what we're interacting over is to a good purpose and with a good motive. Make some sense? I'm kind of thinking it probably does. I'm just entranced with it because I'm entranced with all this because it's a sense of community. And it's so important. It's people talking to each other on the street and looking each other in the eye. And that's how you rebuild a nation. One community at a time. And that's what we're trying to build here with the Head On Radio Network. It's a community that's ensconced inside electrons flowing this way and that way and fiber optic cables and the internets. It's what makes things so special. So, think about that as you walk on the streets, if you go out to community get-togethers. I remember how much fun Agnes and I had at the Beckley Chili Night last October before the kickoff of the show in its new and present incarnation. It was magic. Magic just to walk around and talk to folks. People doing things that they don't do much anymore because they spend all their time working. The husband spends all his time working. The wife spends all her time working. Sometimes they're working one, two, three, four jobs. And they're still one payday away from disaster. An America that functions along those lines does not function. An America that functions along those lines is teetering toward collapse. And I'm not trying to be Mr. Negative, because out of all of this there is some hope. But the hope is inside the human spirit. The hope is inside the American spirit. And there has to be an intervention, and we're doing it. Look at the war debt. Look at the national debt in general. Go watch. I keep pushing this, and I'm not going to shut up until I've got emails from everyone saying, "Okay, Bob, we've all seen it now. You can shut up. We've seen it twice. We've seen it three times." Go to Sundance.org and look at the 2006 entries and watch Ha 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 America. There's a great example of what the trade deficit means. They say, we'll sell you a lemonade stand for $150 and pay you $32.50 for the lemonade. That's the trade deficit. I'm not anti anybody. I'm not xenophobic. I can't get over the fact that the people, you know, the little children that George Bush bombed in Iraq because he said he lost his patience in March 2003. Man, they were no less human than me, no less human than you. It's the speech by Shylock in The Merchant of Venice about if you cut me, do I not bleed? There's no damn difference. I guess that, you know, there are those who make a great deal of profit by assuming that, or by trying to con people into believing that there is. If you read Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States, you can find out, you'll find out that all the way back to the 17th century, there was a move afoot to make sure that the white indentured servants and the African slaves did not get an opportunity to get together to share common cause over their common bondage. People have profited for eons, for 400 years on this continent, by trying to suggest that there was a difference between a Native American and a European. The only difference was an outward manifestation. The Europeans had guns and a willingness to steal things that didn't belong to them, and try to pretend that they could own land. And, you know, people die. Land doesn't, unless people do something to it. As you watch Ha 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 America, please don't think for a moment that it's something anti-Asian, or that it's somehow anti-anyone, but it is about the way that governments manipulate you and manipulate me and manipulate communities, and they're manipulating Florence and Lauderdale County, Alabama. They're manipulating Fayette County, West Virginia. They're manipulating Callaway County, Missouri, and it makes no difference to them. And there's a whole bunch of us that don't seem to understand that. It's coming up, well, it is, 14 minutes before the hour in this, the second hour of our special First Fridays in Florence broadcast, coming to you from Shaolin Computers on Court Street in downtown Florence, Alabama. Such a beautiful place. And it's time for a break. When we come back, your phone calls are welcome. The phone number, of course, you already know, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show, where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, but I just thought it was so...
Oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway. Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
She had to go like 3 miles out of her way because Bush was there visiting. And he had his whole entourage and Secret Service, and they were blocking off the road, the highway that she has to take to get to work.
The Bush got you down? Let Grace and Rama Homebodies get you up every Sunday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern right here on the Head On Radio Network and homebodies.ramabahama.net. We'll trim the mess for you.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, just
join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Creative community. I like to think I've got I'm part of that. You know, babbling is creativity too. God, it reminds me of Ted Knight in the Caddy Shack. Well, the world needs ditch diggers too. All right, there is one last story that I want to hit before the hour is out, and we're gonna strike here. We're gonna go ahead and break down and load out. At the top of the hour, my good friend Bruce Birch is going to be covering in my absence as we tear down, just because it is going to get too dark to accomplish anything. But did you see this? Autopsy, boot camp guards killed teen. Look, it's more of that straightforward, head-on kind of language. Boot camp guards killed teen. A teenager who died at a Florida boot camp was suffocated by guards who were restraining him, a medical examiner has determined. 14-year-old Martin Lee Anderson died in January after he was restrained and struck by workers. How about we change? Now, worker is an honorable thing. Struck by thugs at the boot camp for juvenile offenders. Martin Lee Anderson, 14 years old, was for all intents and purposes executed for the crime of larceny in Florida. Initial, and you know, this was the one, remember we went and we watched the video, and then there was that nurse standing there who just watched it happen, did nothing, watched them kill this young man. And initial autopsy results back in February said that Anderson died from complications from sickle cell trait. Yeah, they suffocated his sickle cells. No, no. Hillsborough County, Florida, Chief Medical Examiner Vernard I. Adams. See, the rest of the world would... See, I'm from the South, I know. The rest of the world would call that Vernard. But it's the South. That's Vernard. Hillsborough County Chief Medical Examiner Vernard I. Adams conducted a second autopsy after Anderson's family, other medical experts, and civil rights leaders balked at the conclusion of the first examination. Quote, Martin Anderson's death was caused by suffocation due to actions of the guards at the boot camp. The suffocation was caused by manual occlusion of the mouth. That means they covered up his mouth and wouldn't let him breathe. When he was screaming, help me, you're killing me, help me, please, Jesus, God, mommy, you're killing me. Manual occlusion of the mouth in concert with, here, let's make it a little more fun for the last few seconds of Martin Lee Anderson, age 14, in concert with forced inhalation of ammonia fumes that caused spasm of the vocal cords, resulting in internal blockage of the upper airway. Mighty fancy medical means of saying they killed him. He stole a little bit of something at the age of 14, and they killed him for it. Videotape of the incident showed Anderson being forced to the ground by various takedown methods, including knee strikes to his thigh, pressure points to his ear, and punches to his arms, because he stole something. Because he stole someone's property. The boot camp staff prepared a report detailing the techniques used on Anderson. This is the good part. This is the part where your blood begins to boil, including holding ammonia capsules under his nose, knee strikes, a straight arm bar takedown, bending his wrist, and pouring water over his head. Hey, look, it's Abu Ghraib! To explain the use of force, one staff member wrote, quote, I ordered the offender to stop resisting and relax his arms. Offender refused to comply with those instructions. Paren, so I killed him. Well, it happened in Bush America, and it happened in Bush Florida. You kind of got to wonder at what point in time we look up and say, nah, enough with the evil. Time to stop being evil. Time to stop doing evil. Time to stop acting evil. Time to stop participating in evil. And there is a vindictive side of me that would like to have everything that, I'm not for capital punishment. No. I'm not going there. But I would like to have everything that was done to Martin Lee Anderson, age 14, offender. I'd like for everything that was done to him to be done to the people who did it to him. I know. I'm where I grew up. I'm going to break into a little of the Old Testament meanness that I was raised up with, okay? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, baby. But see, in the mean and cruel world that is the Republican-driven punishment fetish America, it's okay to do that to Martin Lee Anderson because he's 14, he's an offender, and more than anything else, he's black. My God. You know what's going to happen. They're going to put these deputies on trial. And it's going to be, it's going to be no different than the trial of, who was it? Emmett Till's? Murdered. Had a chain wrapped around him and an old fan from a cotton gin, and he was thrown into what? The Pearl River? The Mississippi? That was the Pearl River, wasn't it? These guys will be acquitted. And they'll talk about how big government did them wrong. Dear God, dear God, dear God. My lovely wife just asked me, how can you relax? And it's a fair question. I'd love to see this happen on the stand with a really withering cross-examination. How can you relax when you're being beaten? I'm guessing Jesus himself flinched when the lash was laid across his back. Right? But I'm just guessing, and that's just me. It has been a delight this evening. And many thanks to my compadres, Bruce Birch and John Fox. They're going to take over the last hour. And I do sincerely appreciate it. I got to get all this stuff taken down. But we've learned a lot tonight. We've learned that it's going to be possible for us to go out and do more of this other places and take the show on the road and continue the efforts of the Head On Radio Network. I won't do the entire credits because the show isn't over yet, but I will say this much. RMR, it's all for you.
The Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Doug Cunningham is off today. Last week, U.S. unemployment claims rose to their highest level since mid-November 2005. The Labor Department said on Thursday that 322,000 workers filed for unemployment last week, an increase of 5,000. The number of workers receiving unemployment benefits also rose to 2.46 million. That's an increase of 21,000, the highest level in 5 weeks. Overall, the unemployment rate remains at a five-year low of 4.7%. As hotels become more extravagant, injury rates have increased. That's according to a study by Unite Here called Creating Luxury, Enduring Pain. After examining 87 unionized hotels, including Hilton's, Hyatt's, and Marriott's, the study found that during the last 3 years, 30% of all injuries at hotels were experienced by housekeepers, a jump of 4% since 2001. The housekeepers experience injuries at twice the rate of other hotel workers. This year is important for Unite Here as the union faces multiple hotel contract expirations in major cities across the country. The union is hoping to use the nationwide expirations as leverage in helping raise wages and address many of the concerns raised in the study. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that the average take-home for a housekeeper in the United States is $17,310 per year.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
For the first time on record, child labor worldwide is on the decline. The International Labor Organization says that the number of workers under the age of 18 fell by 11% between 2000 and 2004, a drop of nearly 30 million. The biggest decline is in Latin America, where the number of child laborers has dropped by two-thirds in 4 years. And now with a special Workers' Independent News sports report, here's Greg Gordon.
The NFL draft is over, but not everyone is cheering this entry-level form of hiring. The NFL, where all 32 owners share money, has created a system to divvy up college athletes that under most other circumstances would be illegal. The NFL is exempt from antitrust laws. College athletes with highly specialized skills have no say about where they ply their trade. The only way for a top athlete to exercise any control over where he goes is to insult the team that might draft him or play another sport. The present collective bargaining agreement ends in 2013. Here's the Wynn Economic Report. A new Massachusetts bill would guarantee all workers in the Bay State up to 12 weeks paid time off to care for a newborn or sick relative. Workers would receive 100% of their weekly paycheck, or up to $750 per week, and would be eligible for leave after at least 9 months of employment. These salaries would be paid out of a fund filled with employee contributions, about $1.50 to $2 a week, and administered by the state. Small businesses, however, are worried about being forced to grant 3 months off to employees.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, not exactly. It's not exactly Bob, but thank you there, Mr. Brian Reznor, for announcing the program. This is actually Bruce Burch, and I'm sitting in for Bob as Bob is tearing down the set down there in Florence, Alabama, where he sat out on the street and did a live remote broadcast of Head On with Bob Kincaid with music in the background and everything. That was great, man. I was thinking about hiring a 21-piece band to come into my my studio here, it's a really short notice. Really short notice. All kinds of things have been happening this evening and on Bob's program, and it's kind of been pretty neat to listen to him talk about his hometown there, and some of the stuff that's been that he's seen in the time that he's been away. So, I'm not going to share too much about my hometown, except for to say that I come from a very, very, very small town in Southside, Virginia. We don't call it Southern Virginia; we call it Southside Virginia. And where I grew up, and I don't know if anyone else can relate to this, but where I grew up, we had, you could basically go anywhere. You could take your bike and go out driving all over the place. You could do all kinds of things without parental supervision. And I think in all of the, 12, 13 years that I was astride a bicycle riding around that town, only once did I ever have a bad experience with someone accosting me or whatever, and this bully that was a bully, totally stole my lunch money. Oh my goodness. So anyway, so there's my small town story. I was getting some cues, but from the production chat there to try to straighten out my mic or whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to do what I can, guys. Anyway, yeah, just picking up the last hour for Bob, and your phone calls are absolutely welcome if you'd like to get in on the radio program. This is Head On with Bob Kincaid. My name is Bruce Burch. I'm sitting in for Bob. The telephone number is 1-877-443-2366, or you can alternatively, if you like letters on your phone, you can dial 1-877, the number 4, and then Head On if you want to get in on the radio program. You can also send me an email if you're so inclined. You can do that by dialing, you can do that by emailing me at, you can send it to bruce@brucebirch.com. That's bruce@brucebirch.com, and the Birch is spelled with a U. Always welcome to your email at all times. I love to talk to folks and to get ideas and to hear about political things and what your ideas are, and have a conversation, because that's what this is all about. This is, as Bob has mentioned a bunch of times, and I have also, this is conversation radio, and so you being a part of this radio program makes this grand experiment in free speech a reality. Now, before Bob went away to go tear down his remote broadcast, one of the things that he talked about on the air was the fact that Martin Lee Anderson, who
was the teenager who was murdered by sheriff's deputies in Florida, had a second autopsy done, and then this autopsy, it was found that he was suffocated to death. Now, I don't know if anyone who is listening to this program has seen the video. We talked about this several months ago. I think it was back in January when he died. But he was basically, for the better part of an hour, dragged around a prison yard, beaten, held onto the ground with knees and his back, pushed up against a tree. And all the while, a woman in a white coat, a nurse, monitored the situation. And if you haven't seen this video, I'll try to find a link to it and put it on the front page of the Head On Radio Network website. But this was the most atrocious thing I think I've ever witnessed.
Oh my gosh, this happened inside the United States?
Well, you know what, ladies and gentlemen, this happens around the world. But this was a 14-year-old boy, I think, who had been convicted of stealing, of thievery, and basically was given the death penalty for it. The initial autopsy results in February had determined that he died from complications from a sickle cell trait, which had not been previously diagnosed in the teenage athlete. However, Hillsborough County Chief Medical Examiner, Vernard Adams, conducted a second autopsy and found that indeed it was caused by suffocation due to the actions of the guards at the boot camp. Now, I wonder what's going to happen to these guys. I wonder what's going to happen to these thugs who are working with children in this boot camp. Now, I also understood, I could be completely wrong with this, but I also thought that I had read recently that the governor had ordered all of these boot camps to be shut down. And I'm sure I'll be corrected if that is not the case. But I guarantee you that what's going to happen. I guarantee you what's going to happen is that they'll close all these boot camps down, and they'll try to become more loving and caring about how they house teenage criminals, and then what'll happen is they'll have a public backlash because someone will break out of one of these detention homes and go and break into somewhere, and you know what'll happen then? They'll put them right back in the boot camps, and the cycle will start all over again. And then someone else will get killed. What kind of society have we come to where we place our children into camps, into, I'll say it, concentration camps, where we use physical intimidation from grown men, some of whom in this video were well over 300 pounds, to beat up on a young 14-year-old kid and then kill him. When I first covered this story back in January, I was beside myself shaking with rage about this. I could not believe it. Could not believe it. But here we are. At least they told the truth with the autopsy, right? There is at least some truth in the world. What a way to start the third hour of the program. But let's go back over. Let's head on over to the phones. I do believe we have our good friend, Mr. Gunny Bob from North Dakota on line one. Bob, how you doing, buddy?
Well, I'm doing fine. I just excuse my cough. I'm a smoker and I have a whatever. Anyway, I was going to say to you, I heard your talk there, and hey, Bruce, you just put it out there the other day so well. But most people don't realize the devil is in the details. It is so fine how they play it. They get down there and they get you thinking. And they give you all these like Bob came out last night with that con game out of Nigeria or wherever, and that young man that came on from, I think he's either New England or up there in the northern states in the East Coast. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, you remember him?
Yeah, I believe it was David from Maine, wasn't it?
Yeah. That young man with a very, very strong young mind, but his mind wasn't corrupted with all the the stuff they pump at you. Okay, you know,
propaganda.
Well, some of that propaganda. Yeah, there's a lot of that out there, and there's some. There's a lot of stuff that people play games with. I played games when I was working in counterintelligence. Okay?
Okay.
And the game was to keep the peeps, or excuse me, I probably popped my peas. You keep them thinking one thing while you're doing something else. Okay? And most of these peeps don't realize that there are pros out in the world watching them. Okay?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
You know, but one of my last details was working with counterintelligence. And we had strange letters coming in. We got them from, I don't know, it was some Generalissimo Archuleta Guillermo. Whatever, okay?
Okay.
The true commandante of the Marine Corps, okay? Like that.
Sure.
It's just games that people play. They play them on the net. They play them in the chat room. They play them on the radio. I mean, when they're talking to you, they're playing games. I listen to them on Hartman's show. I listen to them on Malloy's show. But Malloy, he catches them real quick.
Yes, he does, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he catches them real quick, and he just slams them. You guys allow people to speak, and that's wonderful, because like Bob is creating this conversation radio where people can speak to the world, not to themselves, not telling themselves, I am important, because I'm not. I'm very unimportant. I have no value other than to those peeps or the people that are close to me. See? And most people don't reach out. They don't become a part of a community.
You're absolutely right.
They don't want to assimilate or accept or. You know, the other day they were talking about these, what do they call them, illegal aliens?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The first thing you got to realize that an alien is something that is absolutely foreign to the planet. Okay? So how many little gray guys with great big eyeballs, I mean, you know, or any eyeballs are kind of like... gray-shaped, I think they're like pear-shaped things. I don't know what they got. They get these little gray faces without a nose and no mouth.
Yeah, and
yeah,
you know, actually, those are actually known in the UFO, in the ufology, the UFO underground. Those are known as the grays.
Ah, the grays. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, that would be an alien to me. But I've met Hispanics, and I've met... people of African extraction. There is no difference between the Afro-Americans and the Asian-Americans and the Hispanic-Americans and the Anglo-Americans. There's no difference. Or the original Americans. Okay, there's no difference. We are human. If you
take our
DNA and you break it down and you just get it in this human genome, and you just take it and just run it out to the end, you find there ain't 2 cents a worth difference between any of us, Bruce. There's
that's
nothing.
You're absolutely right. And that's what makes it so sad, is because all of us seem to want to, you know, not all of us, but a large majority of us seem to want to paint each other into little boxes where then we can ridicule and feel better about ourselves by putting the other person down. You know, and that's just completely reprehensible to me.
You know, I feel better about myself.
How's that?
I accept myself first, and then I accept all those around me. I mean, I accept the Nazi up the road, and he is a Nazi, okay? But I accept him as a human being. I don't like him as a person.
Right, right. You accept that he's a Nazi. That's
no, I accept that. No, I know he's.
I know what you mean.
His name is Karl Maisel, and he is, gosh, he's an old-school Nazi, okay? But I accept him as a human being. I don't like him as a person. I don't have to like all persons. I don't have to care about every person that I meet.
Right.
I can accept him as human and realize, well, something is different between us. And the one thing that I do is I accept people that treat me well, and I kind of reject those that treat me poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's human. It's very human. When somebody...
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely human. I mean, you know, why? You know, first of all, why would we want to be... Continue, if you're going to stand up and someone's going to punch you in the face, well, you know, after a while you think, well, why do I continue to keep standing up, right?
I'm not going to cry. I'm just going to, you know, take them out. See,
right.
There's a difference. See, most people just think that, well, if I'm good to them, they'll be good to me. And, like, people like Bush, they think that if I make them fear me, then they will respect me. But there's a difference between all those people, because respect is earned. It's not given. Nobody gives anybody respect. You earn it. And
right.
I respect you, Bruce. You're a good man. You really are. I found you out. I found out about a couple other guys in the chat today, and I respect them. There are some people that I find very little respect for, okay? But they are, they're users. They're kind of like that guy Bob was talking about last night that sent him an email and said, hey, there's this guy that died. He's going to leave you $50 million, or was it $5 million? It doesn't matter. It's just a numbers game, okay? And they try. It's kind of like a shell game or the, you know, was that three-card Monte? You know, it's a sucker's game. If you fight, you lose. And if if you believe, and that's, I love that about Bob. He does not, you know, he says he believes what I tell him because I'm not lying to him. And that's one thing I was talking to Joe here just a short while ago. Old cup of Joe V down there in wherever the hell he's from.
Atlanta.
Yeah, Hotlanta, huh? Okay. But he's a good man, because one thing that he has proven to me over the time that I've listened to him and talked to him is that he's not a liar. He's not a user. He's not a taker. He's a giver. He wants to give something. But
absolutely.
At times, he's like you. You know, he's kind of like a babe in the woods. He doesn't know what to give. Give respect to those that deserve respect, and from those that deserve no respect, destroy them. Okay? Republicans or whatever you want to call them. Okay? Don't respect a man that gives you no respect in the first place. Never.
Well, I agree with that.
Never.
I would
trust somebody that doesn't trust you. And you're a good man. I know it, Bruce. Hey, you are. And Bobby, he's my prince. I've said that before. I'll say it until the day I die. I'll follow that man into hell. And, you know, sometimes I get in the chat room, I think I'm in hell, you know?
That's for sure.
You know?
It can be difficult following all the conversations at once, eh?
Well, some people think that they are the chat room. I've watched that. Some people think this is my chat room and I run it, and I am the queen or the king, or I'm like whatever I say is important. But guess what? What I say is not important. It doesn't matter what I say. If I say it like the Bushistas or those that want to be important, then I'm nothing. But if I say it and it is true, what I say to you, then it is important. It's kind of like Ray McGovern the other day. Man, didn't he do a good job.
I think he did an excellent job. I keep trying to, I'm trying to figure out how he got that close to him. You know?
Lord, can you flash your ID and walk into the Pentagon? Today, I mean right now, can you flash your ID to the security guard and walk into the Pentagon?
My ID? Probably not.
Yeah. Guess what?
What's that?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I went to the door, flashed my ID to the, you know, security guard there, he'd let me through. And then I'd go into the next level, and the next level, and the next level. And eventually they'd ask me, sir, what's your business here today? And I'd tell them, I'm going to see Sergeant Major of the United States Marine Corps. He'd say, aye, aye, sir. And he'd probably let me pass, too, and I'd go see the Sergeant Major of the United States Marine Corps. Could you do that? I doubt it very seriously. And there are a lot of people that get into this game, and they think they're important because of what they did in their job prior to retiring that could get them through that door. And
right.
the thing is this. We had a nation. Okay, we once had a nation. And the nation was called what?
The United States of America.
America. But do you realize that it was America? You know, before it was America, what was it called?
I would say directly prior to the 13 colonies, but that's, you know.
No. See, you're not stepping back far enough into history. Before America, it was called nothing. It didn't have a name. It was a continent that was full of people, some of them.
I seem to remember the Indians calling it Turtle Island.
Well, there were
two. Loose relation or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, there's an old, I think it's an old Mandan myth of how the Earth came to be. Okay, but that's an old Mandan myth, and you know it's kind of like, listen, the Christians talk about their old Christian myth. You know, it's a myth. There's
sure.
no basis in reality. It's kind of like getting in the internet or in the ethernet or whatever you want to call it.
And or a George Bush election.
Well, yeah, that too. we could go and talk to Brad at Brad Blog and really find out what happened in that one, couldn't we? But
well, I understand he had another breaking news story today also, and so I would suggest strongly that if you're into the election thing to go check that out. But
yeah, no. The election thing. I'm waiting for this old six thing to happen and see if all this magic that everybody's hoping for, like some of our friends in the Head On Network are hoping for, happens.
Well, I count me as one of those people hoping.
I know you're always hopeful, and I am too. You know, hey, good Lord, I'm a liberal Democrat. I was one way back when, probably before you were born.
I was going to say you probably voted for Democrats before I was even thought about being a Democrat.
Good.
So.
God, I was a very young man when JFK gave his speeches and inspired me to ask not what my country can do for me, but what I can do for my country, and it inspired me to do what I did, and I gave the better part of my life to this nation, and now people are giving it away. They're giving away their own selfish greed and needs, and that's sad because I gave away my life.
And in the end, isn't that always what happens, though? The powerful who are the greediest among us always end up giving away, you know, that which is most hard won?
By those that can afford it least. And the sad part is, like I told Bob last night, is that this nation is going to fall. Not from without. We're not going to be attacked by some great empire that's going to take the United States down. It's going to be taken down by apathetic people that will not take a look at who they really are. They got their own little crazy games. Some of these games are so insane. They've got, what's this, mojo and magic, and you know they're gonna shake some bone. I love the way Malloy said it. He said, "Shake a bone at you, boy. You know, get your mojo back." You know, did you hear that one? That was sweet. Because hey, go down in the swamps of Louisiana. You know, get out there and have a bone shook on you, boy. You get your mojo back. You know, that's what the Bushistas are looking for, to get their mojo, their magic back, how they can pull the wool over Ben Birch's eyes or Bruce Birch's eyes or Bob Kincaid's eyes. But they won't pull them over Agnes's eyes.
No, they won't.
She's going to pull no wool over her eyes. She is a good girl. And, you know, as much as people have picked on me for loving her, but I love her like a daughter. I mean, truly, I do, and she knows it. Because, you know, she reminds me so much of my Michelle. And Michelle's a young lady, married to a young man, and he's an up-and-comer, okay?
There you go.
Doing his job, and she goes where he goes, and they, you know, take care of business. But the thing is, my friend, you know, I'm burning up some of your daylight. I know you ain't got a heck of a lot left because we've been at it a long time. But don't mess with me on the chat room. Don't do it. Don't do it because I'm going to get you. I will, Bruce.
All right.
But, hey, it's subtle with me because I play games just like they do. I know the games. I've done it. In fact, I invented half of them. But, hey.
Yeah, you did. Yep.
Enjoy your run in the sun, and I hope you can keep it up. And, hey, make this thing fly. Give it wings. Get it out there to the world.
That's what we're trying to do. Bob, I really appreciate your telephone call this evening. And do call in tomorrow night to Fourth Estate Radio, man. We'll be up and on the air.
You want to talk to me? Joe, hey, to my friend Joe Vecchio down there, the hot part of the center, my highest regards to you and to Bob Kincaid, if you're listening. I love you, boy. I love you. Okay?
All right.
And to you, Bruce, I'll see you on the flip-flop.
Sounds great, Bob.
Hat
tip to you, my friend.
All right. And, we'll see you then.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Thanks a lot for calling. This is the Head On Radio Network. You're listening to Head On with Bob Kincaid, sans Bob Kincaid. This is Bruce Birch. I am sitting in for the Talkmaster. We are going to go into a very quick break, and then we'll go right back to the phones. If you want to get in on the radio program, you can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. Or you can send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com. We'll be right back.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The Man Ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
We're here discussing child development with some experts. Tell me the normal development of, say, a 2-year-old.
My truck.
So a child that age should know 2 to 4 word phrases. Good. And what about cognitive development? Ah, engaging in pretend play. I see. And what of social
development? Anna!
Being enthusiastic about the company of other children. All right, thank you.
It's time to change how we view a child's growth. It's not just physical. There are milestones your child should reach in how he plays, learns, speaks, and acts. A delay in any of these areas could be a sign of a developmental problem, even autism. The good news is, the earlier it's recognized, the more you can do to help your child reach his full potential. Talk with a doctor. Visit cdc.gov/act early or call 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn the signs. Act early.
The heart is a blue. Shoots up through the stony ground.
And we're back. This is Head On with Bob Kincaid. Bob is right now in Florence, Alabama, and is probably done breaking down his equipment and probably having a great conversation with some folks there on the street at the First Fridays in Florence. They have a monthly festival down there where they have bands and art performers and who knows, maybe an Uncle Sam or two walking around on stilts down there in the streets. On the first Friday of every month in Florence, Alabama, you can go to firstfridaysinflorence.com, I believe it is. Yes, if you look on the front page of our website, tonight's remote broadcast, was supported in part by Shaolin Computers. If you go to the front page of the Head On Radio Network website, you will see a link to Shaolin Computers right there. You can go and check out their merchandise. I'm sure that those guys would love to see the hit counters spin on their site, so support them because they support us. Just talked to our good friend Bob from North Dakota, and going right back to the phones, we're going to talk to our good friend Spike from Easton, Pennsylvania. Spike, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Gonzo greetings. How are you doing there?
Gonzo greetings, my friend. I'm doing great, but you know, as they say, I will get better, huh?
Real quick, you mentioned Uncle Sam or two on stilts down in Florence, Alabama. I would picture down there they'd probably have Jefferson Davis on stilts.
No. You know, believe it or not, Spike, every now and then, I live in North Carolina, which is not as far south as Alabama. Okay.
Yeah.
Very rarely do you see a Confederate flag on a car or that kind of memorabilia. I mean, maybe once every couple of weeks or so. It's not very often anymore. See, people, you know, those people actually covered up the Confederate flags with their stickers. So.
Yeah, well, the one thing, I used to work on a race team and travel the South, and when we went to Alabama, I mean, that was Talladega County, and let me tell you, there's nothing in Talladega County other than a lot of poor people, and
a racetrack out in the middle of a field.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere. The only thing is like one gas station around it, and that's like the only business for all the race fans to buy beer and food at. That's a trip back in time, some parts of the Talladega County region, and also, not to be too derogatory, but from the looks of a lot of the establishments and waitresses we had where we went, dentists don't make a very good living in some parts of Alabama. sad but true. That was something we noticed about the third day into being down there, is kind of ruined checking out ladies on the road. Other towns, you know, you could hoot and holler and, you know, compare waitresses. Down there is kind of one thing that kind of stood out.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. What else is on your mind besides toothless waitresses and Talladega?
That's usually all that's on my mind. But actually, the biggest thing that's on my mind right now is yesterday with Ronald Dumsfeld and all those Nazi swine that were supporting him in that audience yesterday when all the protesters popped up. And NBC, to their credit, that was what they let off yesterday's news with, and showing all the different protesters, what they were saying, and letting you hear the supporters in there, you know, going, shut up, you know, and all their obnoxious comments. And I think it really goes to show just how deludedly brainwashed a certain 20% of this population is. You know, the uber allies of this administration certainly were in attendance to listen to Mr. Dumsfeld speak yesterday. And best of all, it's his defense. It's such a weak defense. We didn't lie, you know. And, you know, if this was Bill Clinton, they'd be screaming liar. But all of a sudden when you yell at them, that's offensive. I take offense to that, you know. And meanwhile, these are the same people that had their press putting the head of a weasel on the prime ministers and representatives in the UN from France and Germany with that Rupert Murdoch paper. They didn't find that offensive. But somehow they find people actually coming out and speaking the truth offensive. And I believe one of them was with World Can't Wait, because I noticed that down the way out she yelled, "The world can't wait."
Yeah, actually, I got some. Do you have your radio on, Spike?
No, I don't actually.
Okay,
Yeah, I hear a little bit of like a echo on my phone a little bit.
Yeah. I get you know, email alerts from various organizations, and one of them came to me actually from World Can't Wait, and they were advising me that indeed the people that were the protesters that were there at Dumsfeld's event were World Can't Wait folks, and as a matter of fact, Ray McGovern was one of the signers on the World Can't Wait call to conscience, which was basically to refute everything that this president has you know, the entire chaotic militaristic regime he has created. So I thought that was pretty cool. But
I also found it interesting how quick his supporters wanted to rip up the sign, you know, like we're going to forget what these people are upset about. And, you know, certainly it's a little more egg in the face for Rumsfeld. I'm actually glad that GE, who is the second biggest contractor over there after Halliburton, at least they haven't diluted their news division that much. They actually have a little bit of courage every once in a while to show us the truth. Keywords once in a while. There's still plenty of things NBC really hasn't been legit with us about also, but I just thought that was great that they let off their news last night with that, to kind of pour the heat on a little bit on Dumsfeld, because this guy can't stay in office much longer. I don't understand how we don't actually have some legal way to just boot him out ourselves in this country while we have to hope the administration does so. I mean, certainly he committed acts of criminal acts and, for that matter, just acts negligent to the well-being of American citizens and bordering on treason. And if that's enough to get the president and vice president allegedly impeached, possibly, I don't see why not him also. You know, that's the biggest. I think him and Cheney are a bigger threat than Bush. Everyone wants to go after Bush. I think Rumsfeld is the number one guy we got to knock down first.
I think that Mr. Rumsfeld has some political capital built up from somewhere back in his past that he's, you know, I mean, anyone else in this administration would have been kicked out. I mean, yeah. Jon Snow. Who else can we talk? Scott McClellan, the most loyal, quackery, jackbooted thug that they had in the administration, and he leaves.
Yeah.
But Donald Rumsfeld remains, and I think it must, you know, he must, you know, he's got, he must know where there's some bodies buried or something. That's the only thing I can figure.
Well, keep in mind, he was Mr. Reagan and H.W. Bush's broker of arms and Saddam Hussein back in the day, and I'm sure, you know, the image of him being a Reagan Republican is part of why they like him. You know, I know he also worked for the slicky one himself there, Mr. Nixon, and, you know, the only thing I can figure is maybe because he's, quote, old school Republican. They're keeping him from an image reason. I don't know. With criticism from people like Pat Buchanan on this guy, I'm not particularly sure they're really thinking things through why they should hold on to this guy. I mean, they're just they're ruining themselves. I mean, you know, Bush's legacy is probably going to be known as the least popular president of all time when he's done.
This president needs to be, oh my goodness.
Well, he needs to be a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say something, and I realized, you know what? If I say that on the air, I could get into trouble. So, oh my goodness. I think Gunny Bob. We have Gunny Bob up there in North Dakota, and I think Gunny Bob might have some ideas as to what needs to happen. But Bob, that doesn't mean you need to call back. Just, you know, just sit and think about, ruminate on that one for over the weekend, and call us on Monday.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe they could have him interrogated by a couple of those New York City police officers from about, was that 8-9 years ago?
Oh, yeah, with the broomstick? Is that the...
Yeah. The broomstick, yeah. But,
oh, my goodness. Okay, well, this is really degrading quickly.
Yeah, oh, that's man. Right. After the message, I left Charlie Dent for what he did to members of a little local peace group. They met with him a few months earlier in the year. He more or less blew them off, so when they tried to meet with him again, you know, while polls are showing more and more people want to have Iraq, he more or less left them hanging, refused to speak to them. Once the office is closed, you got to leave, and they said no, and they all got arrested, and, he, you know, him and his people, his SS goons there are pushing to have these people brought to court and potentially put in jail for trying to, you know, speak to their congressmen. And, you know, of course, Charlie Dent is a shill tool for the neoconservative agenda, as was his predecessor, Dumbo himself, Pat Toomey. It just boggles my mind why so many people are still supporting these idiots, too. It makes you wonder, you know, it makes you wonder why they still support Trump.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder why they still support the war when the polls show how highly unpopular it's become. I mean, I hear 80-year-old Republicans in the city of Easton saying, oh, this president's horrible, they need to kick him out of office. Hey, these are the same people a few years ago that were supportive of him. You know, I don't understand, who are these people in the Republican Party that think it's so brilliant to support these people at this point? I really don't understand that.
Well, and, you know, the only people that are left that support him are actually people who would follow him off of a cliff, okay? If he said, jump... These are the people that drank the Kool-Aid for Jim Jones. These are the same people that are the Heaven's Gate Nike wearing, gonna go into the spaceship place people kind of people.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. So, but Spike, I really do appreciate you calling in tonight.
Hey, no problem.
And make sure you call in tomorrow night and Sunday night, man. You know, because we have those other two stellar shows, and Cup of Joe too, man. You know. Tune in for those two. We got a, you know, our weekend schedule is really kicking these days.
Well, I definitely will be on the air Sunday listening, but I got a football game down in Philly tomorrow, so I'm not sure what time I'll be coming home.
Right on.
Joe, I might not. Well, I guess we'll see.
Well, be thinking about us anyway, man.
All right. I sure will.
All right, man. Well, listen, have a great night, and thanks for calling in to Head On with Bob Kincaid, sans Bob Kincaid. And that was our good friend Spike from Easton, PA. We're going to go take a very, very fast 2-minute break, and then we'll be right back. If you want to get in on the radio program, we've got a couple minutes left. You can do so by dialing 1-877-443-2366. You can also send me an email to bruce@brucebirch.com if that's the way you would like to communicate. Please do. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
All right, you're back on Head On with Bob Kincaid. This is Bruce Birch. I'm sitting in for Bob this evening for about 9 more minutes. It's about 9 minutes until the top of the hour. What a great show Bob did tonight down there in Florence, Alabama. And, you know, wanted to cover one little small story before I get over to the end of the show. And that is that, you know, very, very, very quickly, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but, you know, this is, you know, in many, many school districts across the station, this is the week for standardized testing. This is the week where we... you know, where we subject our children to the horrors of No Child Left Behind. And teachers all around the country are very happy about testing this week. I think that, you know, if I were a teacher, I would be so happy to hand out the tests. And just hated the standardized, the SATs and the ACTs and the... What else is there? PSAT and the LSAT and all this other stuff, you know. So, but just, you know, when you're going through your week, and if you have kids that are doing this standardized testing to ensure that they have learned everything that they're supposed to learn,
you know, give him a break. Go take some ice cream to him, or, you know what I'm talking about, man. Like, pack a really nice lunch, or, because it's hell. You know, it's hell. You know, doing anything that the government imposes upon you, we all know that. I mean, we know that from paying taxes. But when you're 12 years old, you don't need that kind of stress. Anyway, so there that is. I just wanted to get that out because, you know, I've got kids, man. And they come home, you know, and it's like a stressful week, man, all week long, to, you know, when they're testing. But I think they probably hate it as much as the teachers do. And speaking about government, get this. There is a guy in Newark, New Jersey, who worked for 8 months as a sales director for the U.S. Card Partner Services. He earned $90,000 for the 8 months of work. He was fired from the job. And now his former employer is suing him in federal court, demanding that he pay back the $90,000 plus an additional $210,000 in profits that the company believes it lost because of his poor job performance. How much you want to bet that the U.S. Card Partner Services is a majority Republican-owned and supporting company? But we don't like all that litigious lawsuits. We don't like all them lawsuits. Okay. Just thought I would bring that to your attention. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, as my good friend and partner in Fourth Estate Radio says, it's opposite world. When you get fired from a job for not whatever, for whatever reason, and then they come after you to make you pay back the salary that they paid you for doing your freaking job, what kind of world is this coming to? It's definitely not the world that Bob grew up in Florence, Alabama, or that I grew up in Chatham, Virginia, or that anyone else grew up in the small town America that you grew up in. The world that I grew up in and the world that Bob grew up in is the world that an honest man could earn an honest day's pay for an honest day's worth of work. And if you didn't do your job right, well, they'd try to work with you. And if you didn't do your job right after that, well, then we'd just have to let you go. But that was the end of it. We didn't come after you and sue you to get the money back. That's just crazy. Anyway, I did want to talk a little bit about, you know, we've got about 5 minutes before the top of the hour. And I want to take a couple of minutes and just, for those of you head-on listeners who've never heard me before, my name is Bruce Birch, and I'm very honored to have been given the reins of Bob's program to carry for the rest of the program this evening. You know, last but not least, I really do want to say, though, that Bob was absolutely right when he said that we have to take this country back one community at a time, and that one community at a time has to be done one household at a time, and that one household at a time has to be done one person at a time. And the only way that the message can be brought to bear with the American people and the only way that we're going to be able to turn this country around into the country the way that we want it to be is by carrying forth a message of hope and, yes, a message of love and yes, a message of you know, that yes, we can create the kind of America that we once had where we were more concerned about helping our fellow man than by ripping them off. Where we are more concerned about doing the right thing for the right reasons, rather than trying to negotiate our way into stealing other people's things. That's the kind of America we're living in these days, ladies and gentlemen, with these Republicans in power, because that's all they want to do. That's all they want to do. They want to steal, they want to kill, they want to maim, and they want to call it something besides principles. But you and I know what principles are. And the kind of principles that you and I live by are not those kinds of principles. So I really want to say thank you to Bob for letting me carry this last hour of his show. And I'd also like to thank Brian Reznor for announcing this program, Randy Kerbway for engineering our sound, Peter Godbold, Godbold Computer Services, for being the guy
he's the one who creates all the dilithium crystals by which we fly. I'd like to thank Agnes Kincaid for injuring. Oh my gosh. For producing the program. Sorry, Agnes. I didn't mean that. I'd like to thank Agnes Kincaid for producing the program. What a wonderful, wonderful job she did. Thank you so much, hon, and I love you for it. I'd also like to thank the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights for bringing us this fine radio programming entertainment. If you want to check out my programs, they're both on Saturday night and Sunday night at 10 o'clock p.m. each night on this very same radio stream. And last but not least, always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.